I don't know, Maeve panted, then bent double, releasing a low howl of pain. Diana felt it a second later, the echo of Maeve's anguish. All Amazons were connected by blood, even Diana through her mother. When one felt pain, they all shared it. Women were already running toward them, Tech at the lead. What happened? Tech asked, helping Diana raise Maeve to her feet. Nothing, said Diana, her panic spiking. We were just talking and she... Hell's hounds, swore Tech. She's burning up with fever. An infection? Asked Thera. Diana shook her head. She has no wounds. Could it be something she ate? Otrera suggested. Tech scoffed. At the feast? Don't be absurd. Maeve, were you foraging today? Did you eat anything in the woods? Mushrooms? Berries? Maeve shook her head, her body convulsed on a thready sob. Let's get her to bed and try to cool her body down, said Tech. Fetch water, ice from the kitchens. Thera, go get Yijun. She has experience as a field medic. We'll take Maeve to the palace dormitory. Maeve lives in the Kamenis now, said Diana. New Amazons spent their first few years in the dormitory connected to the palace before they chose which part of the city they wanted to live in. Diana had visited Maeve's new lodgings just the other day. If this is a contagion, I want it isolated. The dormitory is empty and easy to quarantine. A contagion? Said Otrera in horror. Go, commanded Tech. Thera ran toward town to find the medic, and Diana bolted down to the palace kitchens to fetch a pitcher of ice. When she found Maeve and Tech in the dormitory, Maeve was huddled beneath a thin sheet, quivering. Diana set the pitcher beside the bed and stared helplessly at her friend. What is this? It's a fever, Tech said grimly. She's sick. This couldn't be happening. It wasn't possible. Amazons don't get sick. Well, she is, snapped Tech. Thera raced into the room, her golden hair flying. The medic is coming, but two more alarms were raised in town. Fevers? Were they at the feast? I don't know, but... Suddenly, the whole room seemed to shift. The walls shook, and the floor heaved like a beast waking from a deep sleep. The pitcher of ice tipped and shattered on the tiles. Thera slammed into the wall, and Diana had to grab the door jamb to keep from falling. The shaking stopped as quickly as it had started. The only signs that anything had happened were the broken pitcher and the lanterns that continued to sway on their hooks. Freya's braids, said Thera. What was that? Tech's expression was bleak. An earthquake. Here? Said Thera disbelievingly. I need to find the queen, said Tech. Wait for the medic. She strode from the room, boots crunching over shards of pitcher and ice. Diana unfolded a blanket and tucked it around Maeve. She brushed the red hair back from her friend's face. Maeve's skin was too white beneath her freckles, and her eyes moved restlessly beneath her pale lids. Contagion. Quarantine. Earthquake. These words did not belong on them, Ascara. What if they'd come with Alia? What if Diana had brought this language of affliction to her people? No mortal was to set foot on them, Ascara. The law was clear. In Amazon history, only two women had dared to violate it. Kahina had brought a mortal child back from a mission, desperate to save her from death on the battlefield. She'd begged to be allowed to raise the girl on the island, but in the end they'd both been exiled to the world of man. The second was Nessa, who had tried to secret her mortal lover aboard a ship when she returned to Themyscira. As a child, Diana had asked to hear Nessa's story again and again, wriggling in her bed, anticipating the horrible ending, the image of Nessa standing on the shore, stripped of her armor, as the earth shook and the winds howled, so angered was the island, so angered were the gods. Diana always remembered the final words of the story as told by the poet Evandra. One by one, her sisters turned their backs as they must, and though they wept, their salt tears were as nothing to the sea. So Nessa passed from Mercy into the mists, and to the lands beyond, where men breathe war as air, and life is as the wingbeat of a moth, barely seen, barely understood, before it is gone. What can we say of her suffering, except that it was brief? Diana had shuddered at the shrug in those words. She had watched the moths that gathered around the lanterns of her mother's terrace and tried to fasten her gaze on the blur of their wings. There and gone. That fast. But now it was Evandra's other words that she recalled with a terrible feeling of recognition. The earth shook and the winds howled. So angered was the island. So angered were the gods. When Diana had rescued Alia, she'd believed the risk she was taking was for herself alone, not for her sisters, not for Maeve. Diana squeezed Maeve's hand. "I'll be back," she whispered. She hurried out the door and ran across the columned court that connected the dormitory to the palace. "Tech," she called, jogging to catch up with her. As Tech turned, another tremor struck. Diana careened into a column, her shoulders striking the stone painfully. Tech barely checked her stride. "Go back to your friend," she said as Diana trailed her up the palace stairs to the queen's quarters. "Tech, what's causing this?"
"I don't know. Something is out of balance."
Tech strode into the upper rooms of the royal quarters without hesitation. Hippolyta was at the long table, consulting with one of her runners, a fleet-footed girl named Sabah. Hippolyta looked up as they entered.
"I know, Tech," she said. "I sent for a runner as soon as the first earthquake hit."
She folded the message she'd penned, then sealed it with red wax, marking it with her ring.
"Get to Banam Idol as fast as you can, but be cautious. Something is wrong on the island."
The runner vanished down the stairs.
"There have been at least 3 reports of illness," said Tech.
"Are you sure that's what it is?" Hippolyta asked.
"I saw one of the victims myself."
"Maeve," Diana added.
"It may be striking the younger Amazons first," said Hippolyta.
"Not all of them," muttered Tech, casting a sidelong look at Diana.
But Hippolyta's gaze was focused on the western sea. She sighed and said,
"We'll have to consult the Oracle."
Diana's stomach clenched. The Oracle. There would be no hiding then. Tech nodded, a look of resignation on her face. Visiting the Oracle was no small decision. It required a sacrifice, and if the Oracle found an Amazon's tribute wanting, she could inflict any number of punishments.
"I'll light the signal fires to gather the council," Tech said, and was gone without another word.
It was all happening too quickly. Diana followed Hippolyta into her chambers.
"Mother,
if they ride hard, the council should be here within the hour," said Hippolyta.
Some members of the council lived at the Ephesium or Banam Idol, but others preferred the more isolated parts of the island and would have to be summoned by the fires. Hippolyta shucked off the comfortable riding clothes and silver circlet she'd worn at the arena, and emerged from her dressing room a moment later in silks the deep purple of late plums, her right shoulder covered by a golden spalder and scales of gleaming mail. The armor was purely ornamental, the type of thing worn for affairs of state or emergency council meetings.
"Help me bind my hair," Hippolyta said.
She seated herself before the large looking glass and selected a golden circlet studded with heavy chunks of raw amethyst from a velvet-lined case. It seemed bizarre to Diana to stand there plaiting her mother's ebony hair into braids when the world around them might be falling apart, but a queen never appeared as anything less than a queen to her people. Diana summoned her courage. She needed to tell her mother about Alia. She couldn't let her go into a council meeting without that knowledge.
"Maybe it isn't Alia. It could be a disturbance in the world of man. Something. Anything."
But Diana did not really believe that. When the council consulted the Oracle, Alia would be discovered and Diana would be exiled. Her mother would look weak, indulgent. Not everyone loved Hippolyta as Tech did, and not everyone believed that a queen should rule the Amazons at all.
"Mother, today, during the race..."
Hippolyta met Diana's eyes in the mirror and clasped her hand.
"We'll talk about it later, but there is no shame in the loss."
That wasn't remotely true, but Diana said,
It's not that.
Hippolyta set two more amethysts in her ears. Diana, you cannot afford more losses like that. I didn't think you would win.
You didn't?
Diana hated the hurt that spread through her, the surprise she couldn't keep from her voice. Of course not. You're still young. You're not yet as strong as the others or as experienced. I hoped you might place, or at least
not humiliate you.
Hippolyta lifted a brow. It takes more than the loss of a little race to bring low a queen, Diana. But you were not ready, and it will mean you must work even harder to prove yourself in the future. Her mother's assessment of her chances was the same as her measured embrace on the platform, just as practical, just as painful.
I was ready, Diana said stubbornly.
Hippolyta's look was so gentle, so loving, and so full of pity that Diana wanted to scream. The results speak for themselves. Your time will come. But it wouldn't. Not if she was never given the opportunity. Not if even her mother didn't think she could win a damned foot race. And Alia. Alia. Mother, Diana tried again. But Hippolyta was sweeping out of her chambers. Lamplight sparked off the gold in her armor. The earth shook, but somehow her steps did not falter, as if her very stride declared, I am a queen and an Amazon. You are wise to tremble. In the mirror's glass, Diana saw herself reflected. A dark-haired girl in disheveled clothes, her blue eyes troubled, teeth worrying her lower lip like some hand-wringing actor in a tragedy. She squared her shoulders, set her jaw. Diana might not be queen, but the council members weren't the only ones who could petition the oracle. I am a princess of the mascara, she told the girl in the mirror. I'll find my own answers. Chapter 3 Diana hurried to her room to change clothes and fill a traveling pack with a blanket, rope, lantern, and flint, and the rolled bindings she used for her hands when sparring. They would do for bandages in a pinch. 4 hours had passed since Diana had left Alia in the cave. The girl must be terrified. Hera's crown, what if she tries to climb down? Diana winced at the thought. Alia had all the substance of a bag of kindling. If she tried to get out of the cave, she'd only end up hurting herself. But there was no time to return to the cliffs. If Diana was going to fix this, she needed to speak to the oracle before the council did. She opened a green enamel box that she kept by her bed, then hesitated. She had never been to see the oracle, but Diana knew she was dangerous. She could see deep into an Amazon's heart and far into the future. In the smoke from her ritual fire, she tracked thousands of lives over thousands of years, watching the way the currents moved and what could be done to alter their courses. Access to her predictions always came with a steep cost. The most essential thing was to approach with an offering that would please her, something personal, essential to the supplicant. The green enamel box held Diana's most cherished objects. She shoved the whole thing into her pack and ran down the stairs. She'd been pocketing food throughout the feast, but she stopped at the kitchen for a skin full of hot mulled wine. Though the kitchens were always a tangle of clatter and chaos, today the staff worked with grim determination, and strange smells rose in billows of steam from the cook pots. Willow bark, said one of the cooks as Diana peeked beneath a lid. We're extracting salicylic acid to help bring the fevers down. She handed over the goat skin. You tell Maeve we hope she feels better soon. All Diana said was thank you. She didn't want to add to her list of lies for the day. The city streets were full of bustle and clamor as people ran back and forth with food, medicine, and supplies to shore up buildings damaged by the quakes. Diana pulled up her hood. She knew she should be at the center of it all, helping, but if her suspicions about Alia were right, then the only solution was to get her off the island as quickly as she could. A glance at the harbor told her that stealing a boat would be close to impossible. The wind had risen to a full gale, and the sky had gone the color of slate. The docks were crawling with Amazons trying to secure the fleet before the storm descended in full force. Diana took the eastern road out of the city, the most direct path to the Oracle's temple. It was bordered by groves of olive trees, and once she'd entered their shelter, she broke into a run, setting the fastest pace she dared. Soon she left the olives behind, traversing vineyards and tidy rows of peach trees clustered with fruit, then passed into the low hills that bordered the marsh at the center of the island. The closer Diana drew to the marsh, the more her unease grew. The marsh lay in the shadow of Mount Talima, and was the only place on the island that existed in a state of near-permanent shade. She had never ventured inside. There were stories of Amazons entering its depths to visit the Oracle, and emerging weeping or completely mad. When Clarissa had sought an audience at the temple, she'd returned to the city gibbering and shaking, the blood vessels in both of her eyes broken, her nails bitten down to ragged stumps. She'd never spoken of what she'd seen, but to this day Clarissa, a hardened soldier who liked to ride into battle armed with nothing but an axe and her courage, still slept with a lit lantern beside her bed. Diana shivered as she entered the shadows of the marsh trees, draped in veils of moss like funeral goers, the gnarled masses of their exposed roots reflecting sinister shapes in the murky waters. She could hear no sounds of the approaching storm, no familiar birdsong, not even the wind. The marsh had its own black music. The lap and splash of the water as something with a ridged back broke its surface and vanished with the flick of a long tail, the scuttle of insects, whispers that rose and fell without reason. Diana heard her name spoken, a chill breath at her ear. But when she turned, heart pounding, no one was there. She glimpsed something with long hairy legs skittering over a nearby branch and quickened her steps. Diana kept heading what she hoped was due east, farther into the marsh as the gloom deepened. She was sure now that something was following her, maybe several things. She could hear the rustle of their creeping legs above her. To her left, she could see the glint of what might be shiny black eyes between drooping swags of gray lace moss. "There's nothing to be afraid of here," she told herself, and she could almost hear the swamp's low, gurgling laugh. With a shudder, she pushed through a curtain of vines bound together by milky clusters of cobwebs and stopped. She had imagined the Oracle's temple would be like the domed buildings in her history books, but now she was confronted with a dense thicket of tree roots, a woven barricade of branches that stretched as high and wide as a fortress wall. It was hard to tell if it had been constructed, or if it had simply grown up out of the swamp. At its center was an opening, a gaping mouth of darkness deeper and blacker than any starless sky. From it emanated a low, discordant hum, the hungry murmur of a hive, a hornet's nest ready to crack open. Diana gathered her courage, adjusted her pack, and stepped onto a path of wet black stones that led to the entry, leaping from one to the next across water the dull gray of a clouded mirror, her sandals slipping over their glossy backs. The air near the entrance felt strangely thick. It lay heavy against her skin, damp and unpleasantly warm, wet as an animal's lolling tongue. She lit the lantern hanging from her pack, took a shallow breath, and stepped inside. Instantly the lamp went out. Diana heard whispering behind her and turned to see the roots nodding closed over the mouth of the tunnel. She lunged for the entrance, but it was too late. She was alone in the dark. Her heart set a jackrabbit pace in her chest. Over the vibrating insect hum, she could hear the vines and roots shifting around her, and she was suddenly sure they would simply close in, trapping her in the tangled wall forever. She forced herself to shuffle forward, hands held out before her. Her mother wouldn't be afraid of a few branches. Tech would probably give those roots one withering look, and they'd literally wither. The hum grew louder and more human. A sighing, keening sound that rose and fell like a child's weeping. "I'm not afraid. I am an Amazon, and I have nothing to fear from this island." But this place felt older than the island. It felt older than everything. Gradually, she realized the tunnel was sloping upward, and that she could see the dim shapes of her hands, the woven root texture of the walls. Somewhere up ahead, there was light. The tunnel gave way to a round room, its ceiling open to the sky. It had been late afternoon when Diana set out, but the sky she was looking at now was black and full of stars. She panicked, wondering if she'd somehow lost time in the tunnel, and then she realized that the constellations above her were all wrong. Whatever sky she was seeing, it was not her own. The bramble walls held torches alight with silver flames that gave no heat, and a moat of clear water ringed the room's perimeter. At its center, on a perfectly flat circle of stone, a cloaked woman sat beside a bronze brazier hanging from a tripod by a delicate chain. In it, a proper fire burned vibrant orange, sending a plume of smoke into the star-strewn sky. The woman rose and her hood fell back, revealing coppery hair, freckled skin.
"Maeve!"
Diana cried. The oracle's face shifted. She was a wide-eyed child, then a wizened crone, then Hippolyta with amethysts in her ears. She was a monster with black fangs and eyes like opals, then a glowing beauty, her straight nose and full mouth framed by a golden helm. She stepped forward, the shadows shifted. She was Tech now, but Tech as touched by age, dark skin lined, gray at her temples. Diana wanted nothing more than to turn and run. She stayed where she was.
"Daughter of Earth," said the oracle, "make your offering."
Diana willed herself not to flinch. Daughter of Earth, born of clay. Had the oracle meant those words as an insult? It didn't matter. Diana had come here with a purpose. She set down her pack and reached inside for the green enamel box. Her hand hovered over a jade comb Maeve had given her on her last birthday. A carnelian leopard, the little talisman she'd carried for years in her pocket. Its back bowed in the spot where she'd rubbed her thumb against it for luck. And a tapestry of the planets as they had appeared at the hour of her birth. It was lumpy and full of mistakes. She and her mother had made it together, and greedy for Hippolyta's time, Diana had pulled rows of threads out every night, hoping they could just keep working on the project forever. She felt along the box's lining, fingers closing over the object she sought. She looked at the moat. There was no obvious way across, but Diana was not going to ask for instruction. She'd heard enough people speak of the oracle to know that if her sacrifice was accepted, she would be permitted 3 questions and no more. She stepped into the water. She could see her foot pass through it, see her skin, paler beneath the surface, but she felt nothing. Maybe the river was mere illusion. She crossed to the stone island. When she set foot on the smooth rock, the hum of voices dimmed as if she had entered the eye of a storm. Diana stretched out her hand, willing it to steadiness. She did not want to tremble before the oracle, and uncurled her fingers, revealing the iron arrowhead. It was long enough to cover most of her palm, honed to a cruel point, its tip and crevices stained in a red so dark it looked black in the torch's icy light. The oracle's laugh was as dry as the crackle of the fire.
"You bring me a gift you despise?"
Diana recoiled in shock, hand closing protectively over the arrowhead and drawing it close to her heart.
"That's not true."
"I speak only truth. Perhaps you are not ready to hear it."
Diana glanced back at her pack, wondering if she should attempt some other offering, but the oracle said,
"No, daughter of Earth, I do not want your jewels or childish trinkets. I will take the arrow that killed your mother. Though you despise a thing, you may value it still, and the blood of a queen is no small gift."
Reluctantly, Diana extended her hand once more. The oracle plucked the bloodied arrowhead from her palm. Her face shifted. She was Hippolyta again. But this time her black hair was unpinned and unbraided, curling around her shoulders, and she wore a white tunic embroidered in gold. She was as Diana remembered her the day Hippolyta had found her daughter crying in the stables after Diana had overheard 2 of the Amazons talking before their daily ride.
"They said I'm a monster," she'd told her mother. "They said I'm made of mud."
Hippolyta had dried her tears with the sleeve of her tunic, and that night she'd given Diana the arrowhead. Now the oracle spoke with Hippolyta's voice, the same words she'd said sitting in the lamplight beside Diana's bed. There is no joy in having been born mortal. You need never know the sorrow of what it is to be human. Among all of us, only you will never know the pain of death. The words had meant little to Diana at the time, but she'd never forgotten them, and she'd never been able to explain why she treasured the arrowhead so much. Her mother had intended it as a warning, as a reminder to value the life she'd been given. But to Diana, it had been the thing that tied her to a larger world, even if it was through something as gruesome as her mother's blood. The oracle wore the face of an aged tech once more. She tossed the arrowhead into the brazier, and a shower of orange-hued sparks shot upward. "You bring me gifts of death today," said the oracle, "just as you have brought death to our shores." Diana's head snapped up. "You know about Alia? Is that your first question?" "No," Diana said hurriedly. She was going to have to be smarter. "The land shakes. The stalk that never wilts grows weary."
"All because of me," Diana said miserably. "All because of Alia.
And those that came before her. Speak your questions, daughter of Earth." Some tiny part of Diana had hoped she might be mistaken, that Alia's rescue and the disasters on Themyscira had been mere coincidence. Now she could not hide from the truth of what she'd done and the trouble it had wrought. If she was going to make things right, she would have to word her questions carefully.
"How do I save Themyscira?"
"Do nothing." The oracle waved her hand, and the smoke above the brazier arced over the moat. Through it, Diana saw a figure looking back at her from the water. It was Alia. Diana realized she was seeing into the cave on the cliffside. Alia huddled beneath the blanket, shaking, eyes closed, forehead sheened with sweat.
"But she wasn't injured," Diana protested.
"The island is poisoning her, just as she is poisoning the island. But Themyscira is older and stronger. The girl will die, and with her will pass the taint of the mortal world. Most of your sisters will survive and return to health. The city can be rebuilt. The island can be purified once more."
"Most would survive? Will Maeve live?"
The words burned on Diana's tongue, begging to be spoken.
"I don't understand," she said, careful not to ask a question. "I'm not sick, and Alia was fine when I left her."
"You are of the island, born uncorrupted, a Thanatos, deathless. You will not sicken as your sisters do, and your proximity may prolong the girl's life, may even soothe her, but it cannot heal her. She will die, and the island will live. All will be as it should."
"No,"
Diana said, surprised at the anger in her voice. "How do I save Alia's life?" Her second question. Gone. "You must not."
"That isn't an answer."
"Then call her by the name given to her ancestors, Haptandra, the Hand of War. Look into the smoke and know the truth of what she is." Again the smoke billowed up from the brazier and spread over the water, but this time when Diana looked, it felt as if she'd been engulfed in flame. She stood at the center of a battleground surrounded by fallen soldiers, their bodies strewn over a ruined landscape, limbs like driftwood on a black ash shore. She flinched as a massive armored vehicle roared by, a war machine of the type she'd seen in books, crushing bodies beneath its treads. She could hear a rattling sound in the distance, explosions that came in rapid bursts. As her eyes focused on the horror around her, a helpless moan escaped her lips. There, only a few feet away, lay Maeve, her heart pierced by a sword, pinned to the ground like a pale insect. The bodies that surrounded Diana were Amazons. Her eye caught on a splash of dark hair. Her mother, battle armor smashed and broken, her body discarded like so much refuse. She heard a war cry and turned, reaching for a weapon she did not have. She saw Tech, her body glazed in sweat, her eyes battle bright, facing down some kind of monster, the kind from stories, half man, half jackal. The jackal's jaws closed over Tech's throat, shook her like a doll, tossed her aside. Tech fell, blood gushing from her torn jugular. Her eyes focused on Diana, blazing with accusation. Daughter of Earth. Diana gasped, struggling for breath. The image cleared and she was looking at her own face in the water, her cheeks wet with tears. You're getting salt in my scrying pool, said the oracle. Diana wiped the tears from her face.
That can't be. I saw monsters. I saw my sisters.
Alia is no ordinary girl. She is polluted by death.
As all mortals are, Diana argued. What was different about Alia?
The island had rejected her as it would any human presence. If Diana could just get her away from the mascara, everything would return to normal. It is not her death she carries, but the death of the world. Do you think chance brought her boat so close to our shores? Alia is a warbringer, born of the same line as Helen, who was herself sired by Nemesis.
Helen? Not Helen of...
10 years, the Trojan War raged. No god was spared, no hero, no Amazon. So it will be if Alia is allowed to live. She is Heptandra. Where she goes, there will be strife. With each breath, she draws us closer to Armageddon.
But it was Helen's beauty that caused the war.
The oracle cut a dismissive hand through the air, and the torches flickered. Who tells those stories? Tales of vengeful goddesses who wager in human lives for vanity's sake. Of course men believe a woman's power must lie in the fineness of her features, the shapeliness of her limbs. You know better, daughter of Earth. Helen's blood carried in it war, and in her 17th year those powers reached their peak. So it was with every warbringer. So it will be with Alia. You have seen it in the waters.
A line of warbringers. Diana turned the words over. Was it possible? How could a mortal, even a mortal whose ancestry could be traced to Nemesis, goddess of retribution, cause so much misery?
The oracle was watching her closely. Heed me, daughter of Earth. When a warbringer is born, destruction is inevitable. One has been the catalyst for every great conflict in the world of man. With the coming of the new moon, Alia's powers will reach their apex, and war will come. She paused, unless she dies before then.
The explosion wasn't an accident, Diana said as understanding came. Someone wanted Alia dead.
Many someones will do all they can to make sure that the world does not enter an age of bloodshed. But you need do nothing. Simply wait, and the girl will die, as she was meant to in the shipwreck. It is the best way.
Diana's eyes narrowed. She'd read the stories. She knew how oracles spoke. The best way, she considered.
The oracle's mouth turned down at the corners as if she truly could read Diana's thoughts. For the first time, Diana asked herself why the oracle had chosen to appear with Tech's face. To frighten her? To intimidate her?
The best way, but not the only way.
The oracle's eyes flashed silver fire, as if they blazed with the same light as the torches on the walls. Ask your final question and be gone from this place.
Diana opened her mouth, but the oracle raised a graceful hand.
Think carefully. I am not always so obliging in the gifts I accept. You worry over the fate of one girl when the future of the world hangs in the balance. Worry instead for your own future. Wouldn't you like to know if Tecmessa is right about you? If you will bring glory or despair to the Amazons? Eventually your mother will grow weary of rule. Wouldn't you like to know if you will ever truly be a queen, or if you are doomed to spend your life in half-shadow? I can show you all of it, daughter of Earth.
Diana hesitated. She thought of Tech's words, of her mother's denials. The Oracle might tell her she was an abomination, secretly reviled by the gods, destined to bring only misery to her people. But what if the Oracle told her she carried the gods' blessing, that she could be a boon to her sisters instead of a curse? It would absolve her mother, cease the endless speculation about Diana. Tech would never be able to say a word against either of them again. But would it make Diana any more of an Amazon? I could ask how to obtain their approval. I could ask how to win glory in battle. She thought of Alia's hand gripping the hull, Alia's pulse beating beneath her questing fingers. A girl restored to life by Diana's own breath. Save my people, and Alia dies. Save Alia, and I'll watch my sisters slaughtered. Really, it made the question simple. How do I save everyone? Fury suffused the Oracle's features. Her image flickered. A serpent, Tech, a skull, a black-gummed wolf. Her eyes were gemstones. Snakes writhed upon her head and poured from her mouth. Stubborn as all girls are stubborn, she snarled. Reckless as all girls are reckless. The words were out before Diana thought better of them. And were you never a reckless, stubborn girl? A pointless question, but it didn't matter now. Diana had asked the important question first, and the Oracle's anger made her believe it had been the right one. The anguished hum rose around them, an aching lament layered with wild sorrow, and in it Diana heard the echoes of her sister's cries on that terrible battlefield. When the Oracle spoke, she was no longer Tech, but wore a different face, one that seemed hewn from light itself. The Warbringer must reach the spring at Therapni before the sun sets on the first day of Hecatombion. Where Helen rests, the Warbringer may be purified, purged of the taint of death that has stained her line from its beginning. There may her power be leashed and never passed to another. Therapni. Greece. It would mean leaving the island. Impossible. And yet, the line of Warbringers would be broken? The Oracle said nothing, but she made no denials. If Alia died on Themyscira, a new Warbringer would be born. Maybe in a month, maybe in 100 years, but it would happen. If they could reach the spring in time, if Diana brought Alia there under her protection, that would all change. I see you, daughter of Earth. I see your dreams of glory. But what you do not see is the danger. Factions in the world of man hunt the Warbringer. Some seek to end her life that they may ensure peace. Some seek to protect her life that they may bring about an age of conflict. In less than 2 weeks, Hecatombion begins. You cannot hope to reach the spring in time. You are one girl. Diana clenched her fists, thinking of the bloodied arrowhead the Oracle had accepted as sacrifice. Her mother's blood. The same blood that flowed in Diana's veins. I am an Amazon.
Are you? You are not a hero. You are not battle-tested. This quest is far beyond your skills and strength. Do not doom the world for the sake of your pride.
That isn't fair, Diana said. I'm trying to do what's right. Even as she said the words, Diana knew they weren't entirely true. She did want glory. She did want the chance to prove herself, not just with a foot race or a wrestling match, but with a hero's quest, something no one could deny. She wanted to argue with the Oracle, but what was the point in debating an all-seeing ancient?
Go home, said the Oracle. Go back to the Ephesium. Comfort your sweet friend. Let her know her suffering will soon be at an end. When the council comes, I will tell them nothing. No one ever need know what you have done. Your crime will remain a secret, and you need not fear exile. The island will return to what it was, the world will be safe, and you may live in peace with your sisters. But should you take the girl from the island?
The hum rose to a howl, 1,000 howls, screams rising from the charred earth,
The clash of swords, the lamentations of the dying, her sister's misery amplified 1,000 times. The sound of a future Diana could prevent by simply doing nothing.
Go, commanded the oracle.
Diana turned and ran back into the tunnel, into the dark, unable to escape that terrible howl. She ran without caution, scraped her shoulder against the bramble wall, tripped as the tunnel slanted downward, stumbled to her knees. Then she was back up, running again, that horrible chorus of anguish building to a shriek that vibrated through her bones and hammered at her skull. The roots parted before her, and she tumbled out of the temple and into the brackish water of the marsh. She dragged herself upright, breathless, and lurched toward the banks. Through the gloom of the marsh she fled, trying to put as much distance as she could between herself and the temple. Only after Diana burst from the darkness of the trees and crested the first set of low hills did she allow herself to stop. She could smell the sweet green scent of honey myrtle, feel the fresh spatter of rain on her skin. But even here, she did not feel safe. I am an Amazon. In the whispers of the leaves, she heard the oracle sneering. Are you? She could not risk it. She could not risk her sister's lives for the sake of a girl she barely knew. She'd been foolish to dive into the sea this morning, but she could make the right choice now. The earth rumbled beneath Diana's feet. Lightning split the sky. She hitched her pack more securely on her shoulders and headed for the cave. Alia was dying. If Diana could not save her, at least she could make sure she did not die alone. Chapter 4. The giant was back. Alia thought that maybe after the wreck, in her panicked, adrenaline-fueled state, she'd exaggerated the details of her rescuer. But no, the girl was back in the cave, and she was just as Alia remembered her. 6 feet tall and gorgeous, built like someone who could sell weird fitness equipment on late-night television. The ab blaster. The biceps monger. Maybe I'm delirious. She knew she had a fever and chills, but she couldn't make sense of her symptoms. The headache and the nausea could be the result of a concussion. No doubt she'd been banged around pretty badly when the Thetis went down. But she didn't want to think about that. The shock of the explosion, Ray screaming, the gray weight of the water as it dragged her down. Every time her mind brushed up against it, her thoughts stuttered to a stop. Better to focus on the cave. The blanket tucked around her, the terrible pounding in her head. If it was just a bad concussion, then her job was to stay awake until help came, and she'd done it. Here was help, in the form of a girl who looked like a supermodel who moonlighted as a cage fighter. Or vice versa. But where was the rescue team, the helicopter, the EMTs to flash a light in Alia's eyes and tell her everything was going to be all right? Just you? She croaked, unnerved by how weak her voice sounded. The girl sat down beside her. Have you eaten anything? Not hungry. At least some water? Alia didn't have the strength. Dimly, she was aware of something being pressed to her lips. Drink, the girl commanded. Alia managed a few sips. Is help coming? The girl hesitated. I'm afraid not. Alia opened her eyes fully. She'd succeeded in keeping her panic in check so far, but she could feel it trying to claw free. Is it the earthquakes? At the first tremor, Alia had dragged herself to the cave opening, terrified the rock above her would give way and she'd be crushed. But one glance at the drop to the sea had sent her scrambling backward. She'd huddled in her blanket, fighting her rising fear. One thing at a time, she'd told herself. I'm on an island. Maybe there's volcanic activity. Just wait for help to come. She'd done her part. She'd kept conscious, managed not to expend her energy on crying or screaming. So where was her rescue? The girl's expression was troubled, her gaze trained on her sandaled feet. Alia realized she'd changed clothes. Back on the beach, she'd worn some type of white tunic, but now she was in brown leather trousers and what looked like a cross between a tank top and a sports bra.
"This island is very isolated," she said. "It's... contacting help wasn't possible."
"Then the rest of the crew?"
"I'm sorry, I wish I could have saved them all."
Her words didn't quite make sense to Alia. Nothing did. She closed her eyes, the ache of tears filling her throat. Her best friend, Nim, liked to joke that Alia was a jinx because trouble seemed to follow her everywhere.
Fights erupted at parties. Couples started arguing over nothing. Then there was that time a free concert in Central Park had somehow turned into a riot. It didn't seem so funny now. Thinking about Nim, about home, about the safety of her own bed, made the tears spill over.
"Were they your close companions?" the girl asked quietly.
"I barely knew them," Alia admitted. "I need a doctor. There's something wrong. I think I hit my head during the wreck. There may be internal bleeding."
Though even as she spoke, she realized that since the girl had appeared, the pain in her head had receded. Maybe she'd been more dehydrated than she realized.
"There was an explosion on your craft," said the girl, "before it sank."
Alia leaned her head back against the cave wall.
"I remember. On the beach, you said it was your fault."
Those words felt like a fist pressed against her heart.
"I did? I must not have been thinking clearly."
"Do you think... is it possible it was intentional, some kind of bomb?" Alia's eyes flew open.
"What are you talking about?
Could the wreck have been deliberate?"
"No, of course not. It..."
Alia hesitated. All of Jason's paranoid warnings came back to her. "We're targets, Alia, our money, the foundation. We have to be smart." Smart meant trained bodyguards on staff at the penthouse. It meant an armed driver to take her to school every morning and drop her off every afternoon. It meant no class field trips, schedules that accounted for every minute of her day so that Jason always knew where she was. Summers spent in the same place each year, seeing the same people, staring out at the same view. It was a good view. Alia knew she had nothing to complain about.
"But that didn't stop you, did it?"
She'd been happy to whine to Nim on every occasion, and she'd pretty much jumped at a chance for something new. A month spent with different people, away from Jason's ridiculous rules. Maybe not so ridiculous. Could someone have put a bomb aboard the boat? Could one of the crew have blown up the Thetis on purpose? Her fears must have shown on her face because the girl leaned forward and said,
"Speak. Is it possible?"
Alia didn't want to believe it. If someone had been willing to blow up her boat, to murder innocent people just to get at her and the foundation, then Jason had been right about everything, and she'd been the biggest fool alive.
"It's possible," she admitted reluctantly. "I'm a Kyrallis."
"A Greek name?"
"My dad was Greek. My mom was black from New Orleans."
People always wanted to know where the color came from. Alia reached for the water. She really did feel a little better, though her hand shook as she lifted the skin to her lips. The girl steadied Alia's arm as she drank.
"Thanks. You've never heard of the Kyrallis Foundation? Kyrallis Labs?"
"No. What does that have to do with the explosion?"
Alia felt suddenly wary.
"Who are you?"
My name's Diana."
"Diana what?"
"Why does my name matter?"
"Why?" Because even if this girl lived on a remote island, everyone knew the Kyrallis name. That was part of the problem.
How had Diana gotten to the wreck site so quickly? What if she'd known about the bomb on the boat?
Alia gave her head a little shake and was rewarded with a stomach-churning wave of dizziness that left her panting. She pressed her head against the cave wall and waited for it to pass. She wasn't thinking straight. There was no reason for a girl to try to kill her, then save her life, and stuff her in a cave.
"People hate my parents. Now they hate me."
"I see," said Diana in understanding.
Did your parents slay a great many people?
What?
Alia cast her a sidelong glance.
They were biologists, bioengineers. People get weird about some of the work they did in genetics and the Foundation's politics.
Diana's brow furrowed as if she was attempting to parse all of this information.
You think that's why someone attempted to take your life?
Why else? The girl said nothing. Alia felt another tide of nausea roll through her. A cold sweat broke out over her body.
I need a doctor.
There's no one on the island who can help you.
A clinic, a boat back to Istanbul or the nearest port.
It's just not possible. Alia stared at Diana, feeling her panic slip free of its leash.
Then what's going to happen to me?
Diana looked away. Alia pressed her palms to her eyes, humiliated to find tears threatening again. She didn't understand what was going on, only that she'd never felt more tired or scared, not since she was a kid. How had things gone so wrong so quickly?
I never should have left home. Jason said to stay in New York. He said it was safer. But I wanted this so much.
Diana drew another blanket from her bag and tucked it around Alia. It smelled of sage and lavender.
What did you want?
It's stupid, Alia said.
Please, I'd like to know.
Alia closed her eyes again. She felt too weak to talk, but the guilt and shame were stronger than her fatigue.
There's this summer at sea program for biology students. You get college credit. It's really hard to get into, but I thought I'll just apply and see what happens. But then they accepted me and I realized
how very much you wanted to go.
Yeah,
Alia said with a small smile. She felt it fade from her lips.
I lied to Jason.
Who is this Jason?
My older brother. He's a great brother, the best brother. He's just overprotective. I knew he'd say no to the trip, so I told him I'd been invited to Nim's parents' place in Santorini.
You don't know how hard it was to keep everything secret. I had to get a visa, get all of these medical approvals. But then I was just doing it. I ditched my bodyguards at the airport, and I didn't call Jason until I was about to board the Thetis in Istanbul.
Alia released a sob. He was so angry. I swear, I've never heard him raise his voice, but he was yelling. He forbade me from going.
I hung up on him.
Does he command you frequently?
Diana asked.
Many men enjoy having authority over women.
Or so I've been told.
Alia snorted, but Diana looked serious.
Well, sure. But Jason's not like that. He was just worried about me, trying to keep me safe. I thought if I could show him that I could handle this on my own, he'd have to stop babying me.
Diana sighed.
I understand. My mother doesn't think I can handle anything on my own either.
Are you kidding? You saved my life. You carried me to a damn cave on your back.
You seem pretty capable.
In my family, among my friends, I'm the weak one.
You don't seem weak to me.
Diana gazed at her for a long moment.
You don't seem weak to me either.
Alia blew out a breath.
But Jason was right. If I had stayed in New York, if I had just listened to him, no one would have died. I should never have left home.
Diana frowned. If you'd stayed home, maybe others would have been harmed, your friends or your family.
Maybe,
Alia said, but the thought brought her little comfort.
And you had this dream, continued Diana, to study, to garner accolades.
Well, college credit, at least.
How could it be wrong to wish to prove yourself? She asked, a fierce light in her eyes. You were not wrong to dare.
Jason cannot protect you forever. We cannot spend our lives in hiding, wondering what we might accomplish if given the chance. We have to take that chance ourselves.
You were brave to board that boat.
I was stupid. Everything that happened just proved Jason right.
No,
You survived the wreck. When the waves came, you held on. Maybe you're stronger than you think you are, than anyone thinks you are.
Diana stood.
Maybe I am, too.
She offered Alia her hand. We have to get you out of here.
I thought you said... I know what I said. Do you want to get off this island or not?
Alia had no idea what had caused this turnaround, but she wasn't going to look a gift giant in the mouth.
Yes, she said eagerly.
She took Diana's hand and rose slowly, trying to fight the surge of dizziness that overtook her.
What do we do? Do you have a boat or something?
It's more complicated than that. I'm going to need you to trust me. The people here... There are terrible risks, and the things you see... Well, if we make it out of this, you can never speak of them again.
Alia raised her brows. Was this girl messing with her, or was she a little nuts?
Okay. Sure.
Swear by what is most dear to you.
Maybe more than a little nuts.
I swear on Jason and Nim and my shot at an Ivy League school.
Diana cocked her head to one side.
It will have to do.
She turned her back to Alia and said, Climb on.
Alia groaned. Do we really have to do this again?
She wasn't feeling particularly spry, but there was something humiliating about jumping on someone's back like a 5-year-old.
Diana shrugged and said, See for yourself.
After her first terrifying glance down, Alia had deliberately avoided the entrance to the cave. But now she gathered the blankets around her shoulders and peered over the edge again. The drop to the rocky boulders below looked even steeper than it had that morning. Holding tight to Diana's hand and the ragged rock of the cave mouth, she looked up. Somehow the sheer cliff rising into the stormy sky seemed twice as terrifying as the drop.
We're going to climb that? She asked.
I'm going to climb that.
With me on your back?
You're very light. I wonder if you have a calcium deficiency.
My calcium's just fine.
Your muscle tone is poor, too.
I prefer the pursuits of the mind, Alia said loftily.
Diana looked doubtful. Most philosophers agree that mind and body must be in accord.
Is that like 4 out of 5 dentists? Alia asked.
Besides, she doubted most philosophers ever had to play dodgeball in the Bennett Academy gym. She sighed. Even at her best, the climb would have been close to impossible for her, and she was definitely not at her best. She eyed Diana warily. Alia had never thought of herself as short, but next to this person, she felt about as statuesque as a miniature schnauzer. It wasn't just that the girl was tall. She was sort of majestic, like a skyscraper, or Mount Rushmore, but less craggy. Alia straightened her spine.
Okay, we do it your way.
Diana nodded and turned, gesturing for Alia to clamber onto her back. Alia hopped on, and the girl hooked her hands beneath Alia's knees, shifting her into place like an oversized backpack. So much for dignity.
Giddy up, Alia said sourly.
Pardon? On, you huskies?
I am not your steed, Diana said, but she trotted, jogged, to the mouth of the cave.
Without warning, she dug her fingers into the rock and swung outside. Alia squeezed her eyes shut and held on tight, trying not to think of the unforgiving boulders below.
So, she said, chin tucked over Diana's shoulder, attempting to distract herself. Now that we're hanging off the side of a cliff together, any hobbies?
My mother is trying to get me to take up the lyre.
Interesting choice.
Siblings?
No.
Any nicknames?
Alia felt the girl's muscles tense beneath her.
No.
Maybe that was enough small talk.
Diana's body moved in stops and starts as she searched for holds, making steady progress up the cliff. Occasionally she would grunt sharply or mutter, but she wasn't panting or grumbling the way Alia would have been. Just as Alia was wondering how much cardio this girl did, the cliff shook with a tremor. Diana's foot slipped. They dropped,
A cry escaped Alia's lips as her heart lodged in her throat. They jerked to a rough halt, dangling in the air,